Welcome back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. This is going to be a positive piece right now. We talk about wise conversations around here, all brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets, the intelligent conversations. You know, I don't know how intelligent this one's going to be, because usually on the program, I'm the one who asks the questions, and then the other person is allegedly like the smarter one. This time, I'm going to be asked the questions, and I know I'm probably not the smarter one in this one, but it is a pleasure to welcome this young lady on. She wrote to me through friends of friends, through the Ravens. She's up there in Delaware, probably has no idea that my aunt Clara grew up right over Brookside Park, right around the corner from the house that Joe built and the Carpenter Center, where I once saw Barry Manilow and 38 Special and Leonard Skinner. So we'll have all that. Artica Cassini, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, is up in University of Delaware and writing a story about one of my favorite topics, and one that I do not get to talk about often enough, Joe Flacco, or as we say here in Baltimore, that Joe Flacco, he's up in Philadelphia trying to kick our asses down here. So Artica, welcome in. It is a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for playing foil and fun. You've written to me a couple times about you're in my position. I used to be like the writer and the newspaper writer and the magazine person, like trying to like get some background on a topic or a subject. So this time I'm sort of flipping the script on you a little bit. You've been a fun sport, but I told you I love telling Joe Flacco stories, and I wrote this story, this Dear Joe Flacco letter, I guess a couple years old now. And at one point, I guess I was Nostradamus and predicting that he would wind up in Philadelphia. And lo and behold, here you are halfway to Philadelphia in Newark, where I stopped many times, and our friends are still there at the Stone Balloon. Thanks for coming on and playing fun. How are things in Delaware? You guys like in class, out of class, distance? I have no class. You know that.
Things are good. Things are good. We're really excited for hopefully getting back to campus in the fall. It's been a weird year because you know, it's like such a beautiful, stunning campus. And so last year to be on the, you know,
just I was young once, Christiana.
You remember it.
I mean, come on.
Look
I mean,
at you knowing all the hallmarks.
Not that far away, you know. I mean, there's great places to eat up on, you know, great concerts and memories. And, you know, I was telling stories about seeing Cheap Trick, and Tommy Conwell was on the show a couple weeks. There's a Philadelphia guy there. I saw him at the Stone Balloon. So I have fond memories of Delaware and my aunt and my cousins and growing up and up there and getting off. You know, trying to beat the toll and getting off in Elkton where the Waffle
That's
House is. Yep. You're nodding. So you know all about you. You
oh,
know
yeah.
I know my way, right?
You're an insider. Yep.
Insider. So give your background. Tell my audience who you are and then what we're about to do, because I want this to be fun. I don't get off asked often enough about Joe Flacco. And when I do, it's, I don't know, there's hours of tape and there's, I've written books and like all that kind of stuff. So I tried to pour my heart out, but you want more.
I want more. No, I'm so grateful for your time and insight and expertise. I loved the letter you wrote to Joe, the Purple Rain, R-E-I-G-N. I hope I spelled that right. Part two. I mean, just really just lots of
I never got
awesome
sued by Prince. I thought at some point.
Congratulations.
I thought some
Great
point
title.
I was going to get a really nasty letter from Minnesota, you know, in a Paisley, you know, it would have been nice, but I would have said, Mr. Rogers, I didn't mean anything by stealing Purple Rain 1 or 2, one, there'll be a Purple Rain 3.
Right.
I hope there is a Purple Rain 3 with Lamar, but you know, the one thing I'd say about the Flacco thing is it feels like a long time ago, right? Like, you know what I mean? It hasn't been that long ago, but it feels like with Lamar here and playoff games, it feels like he's rear view mirror here. And I think he knows that, right? Like, I don't know when the Ring of Honor is. He was back for the Marshall Yanda press conference last year. And when Marshall retired, we had lost a horrible game. So this is January before the plague.
So, cause I'm a football dummy. I edit the University Magazine and I don't know who Marshall is.
Marshall will be a strong Hall of Fame candidate. Who's a right guard whose job was to protect Joe, love Joe, was here before Joe got here. No, came when Joe was here. No, no, got here before Joe got here by a couple years, 06-ish.
And, like same era, yeah.
And Marshall was retiring, right? So Marshall had won a title with Joe and was retiring. Oh, and what they usually do when you bring that they bring him and his family in. They have a press conference. They cry. They tell stories. Teammates make him cry. I ask questions that make him cry. Their wives and kids. So Marshall had lost like 50 pounds, maybe 100 pounds in like 10 weeks. Like, we had seen him play football in January, and this thing was before the plague. So this is like early March, kind of weird. We're not wearing masks yet. And we walked into the room, and the doors open in the front in the auditorium where the Ravens complex is, and in walks like 25 of Marshall's teammates through the course. I mean, this is out of season. So some guys had to fly in for this or make it. It was special. It was really neat. Right. But Joe walks in with Dana and sits in front of me. It's like a church pew, right? Like, he's right in front of me. So I'm like whispering all sorts of, you know, mess in his ear, saying stuff to him, you know, making Denver jokes and just having fun with him a little bit. But that's the last time I saw Joe. I have not interacted with Joe. So that's all I've got for you since writing that letter. He has never written me to say he read that letter. Mm-hmm. I know I sent it to him. I sent it to his wife. I know his agent read it and sent me a note, but I have completely, like, if I look through my phone, maybe we've texted once or twice in the 2 years in a jokey kind of Philadelphia sports way or something, but like nothing. I have no contact with Joe, if that matters.
Well, he's okay. No, he seems pretty low key. So I guess maybe then take me back to the very beginning. And my first question for you is really, what were your first, well, tell me about the first time you met him. And what your first impressions were at the time and how they changed over time. And you can either do it with like the first time you actually physically met him, talked to him, or just kind of your first impressions, because his start at the Ravens was really kind of lucky and unexpected. So, did you know much about him, you know, going into the season, and did you ever think that he had to have a, he would be the starting quarterback?
See, I knew this segment would be good, because I've never been asked that. So,
oh, good.
So I'm happy to answer that, because I had to think about it.
Yeah, that's like six questions.
The day he got drafted, I was at Padonia Ale House doing a show. We always did a big event. Fans would come out. It was an all-day Saturday event. You know, we would drink, and we'd always want darts, pool table, things to do, video games, things to do other than sit and watch Mel Kiper, which, and eat wings, which we did a lot of that, drank beer. There's always trades and drama, and it was fun, more fun than this Thursday night thing. So it was back in that era, and the rumor that they were going to draft a quarterback was not lost on anybody, that that's the direction they were going to go in. They, Matt Ryan was going to be gone. They didn't have enough draft capital to move up high enough. They didn't have enough picks to trade away to move that, to make that kind of move. So they rumored that a guy named Chad Henne from Michigan was going to be their pick. They had blown some smoke toward a guy named Peter King, who's a really big deal, major followers, early internet. Oh, wait, right? So, you know, it's kind of pre-Twitter, or like right on the beginning of Twitter. And all of the rumor was that Chad Henne was to be drafted. And boom, move, bang, Flacco, Delaware. Oh, my God. And Flacco was interesting because he had played games here. Against Towson University's here, you know, inside the Beltway. His brother wound up going there. Towson and Delaware were, you know, rivals in football. And I actually emceed an event at a Delaware Towson game. We were the voice for Towson football. We were their flagship at WNSD. And I had, and I can tell you, I've done radio 30 years, Artica. Like, I've only like been at the 50-yard line and dropped the puck or had a mic. Other than my flag football game at Dundalk High School, the powder puff game with the girls playing, and I was like the jerk with the microphone. I've done it maybe five times in my life, and this was one of those times. Delaware played Towson at Johnny Unitas Stadium, and I went out at the 50-yard line at halftime and kind of entertained the troops and gave some stuff away and whatever, and the place was packed. Like, pack, you could not get in. Wow. Scalper couldn't get in. This is, I mean, you're at Delaware, right?
This is the first time you've ever
appreciate
seen Joe
this.
Play?
And this is honest to God. My wife and I had tickets that night that we had in our pocket because I was with the radio station and we had tickets. You know, we had 100 tickets, 30, whatever it was, right? But it was a hot ticket. And we left after halftime because it was like a Saturday night and I'd had enough and it was 10 o'clock and I had done my thing. It was the third quarter, but there was nowhere to be seated in the bowl. And we walked out and there were an older gentleman and his wife sitting on a Blue Hand, one of those fake chairs, the little seated thing with, you know, that you sit on in the grass, like a fake seat cushion with a back on it. Mm-hmm. And they were out on the grass and they couldn't even see the game. And I had tickets and I'm like, dude, go into the game. Here's a seat. Go in. And I gave this guy in the third quarter, and Flacco like threw five times. I mean, you know, you can go look up the box score, but it was one of those 49 to 41, like a lot of passing kind of games. And I didn't think anything of this kid from Delaware. I mean, I was on the field and he's this tall, skinny kid who could chuck it. And the lights are kind of crappy. It's Towson. You know what I mean? It's a Saturday night, but it was buzzy and it was happening. But I never in a million years thought a year later that they would draft this kid. You know what I mean? Wow. Like, so I had no experience to say, that's Joe Flacco. I sort of remember, he was the tall, skinny kid that cut up Towson that night, man. He was chugging around. That's all I remembered about him. But the story, and I would encourage you to read Purple Rain too, because Joe Douglas, who is now the New York Jets general manager, was the guy who discovered Joe and gave me a whole chapter. Chapter 7 and 8 in Purple Rain 2, I think it's 7 and 8, how to draft a franchise quarterback. It's all free. It's online. Please go read it, because I poured my heart and soul into writing it. But Joe Douglas and Eric DaCosta and Ozzie Newsome and Joe Ortiz and Phil Savage and Casey Keeler and a bunch of other people gave me like what you're writing, Artica, you know, they gave me.
Yeah. Pearls. Totally.
So I could tell a story and a story I was thrilled to tell. And now that the story has more legs and Joe's back in Philly and Joe's running the Jets and, you know, all these stories, I learned that from Purple Rain 1. I wrote Purple Rain 1 in 2001 when we won the first Super Bowl. And then I wrote Purple Rain 2 12 years later because we won the Super Bowl 12, and everything about it, the story gets richer. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, and I think the Joe Flacco story will get richer as time goes on. He owns a golf course in Philly with Jaworski and, you know, whatever he's going to do with all those kids he has too. So I don't know.
Well, you know, this is a good kind of segue, I guess, because your first impressions of him were really as just this tall, skinny kid.
Well, that's the first time I saw him on the field. Yeah. Now, the next time I saw him, they drafted him, shocker, right? They bring him in for the press conference. And I found his father compelling. His father is about as tall as me. You know, his father is like 5'9", 5'10". He's 6'5", and still looked like he was growing. And because of you, I went surfing for some old YouTube videos. It's amazing how many times I stood in the locker next to Joe Flacco holding my little camera, my little Canon Elf, shooting video for YouTube in 8, 9, 10, 11. I mean, he looks young. I look young. I'm asking funny things. He's cussing in his locker. There's funny stuff from back. Now that's funny because it's 13 years later.
Yeah.
But Steve Flacco, his father was an athlete. And I don't want to say a stage dad, because I mean, that wouldn't be fair. But clearly his father knew a lot about sports and about games and about strategy and about getting his kid into a situation that we learn navigating, getting kicked out of Pittsburgh because he wasn't the starter, finding his way back to New Jersey and into your university of Delaware to get himself drafted on day one, unlikely, and with a real team with a chance to win. And then all that dude ever did was go out and freaking win, which is why I love Joe Flacco. So anybody doesn't love Joe Flacco can fly a kite. You know, I mean, literally, like if you're in Baltimore and you don't appreciate Joe Flacco, you know, it begins with an F. That, you know, I'd say that to anybody. So my first impression was his father. And there's a video. The video of me and his father is on YouTube. Go find it. Steve Flacco. The actual video, the day I met Joe. Joe's in the background talking to Jerry Sandusky or somebody significant. And I was really flirting with his father because his father gave the story of what happened to Pittsburgh. Like, was telling the story that a reporter like me or you would want to know.
What impressed you about him?
And I said to his father, if you want to know anything about Baltimore, come down here. I will walk you around. I will tour you. The next day, his father called me with his Philly accent, his Jersey. And he said, we'll come down. And the next thing I know, I'm in front of my building. And this is where I live. I live downtown. And a white Volvo, the kind that takes diesel gas. It was a white Volvo. It was covered in black smut. And it had Jersey plates on it. It was like a car that might have been 23 grand new, but it was like 8 years old with 158,000 miles on it. So probably if Flacco traded that car in, he got $6,000 for it, maybe eight at that time in 08. Mm-hmm. So he drives down here and I got him a parking pass and parked in the back. He's nothing special. He's from Delaware. He doesn't have his signing bonus. And my partner, Tom, met me here, and me and Tom and Joe and Steve walked through the Inner Harbor to Amici's of Little Italy. So that's a 30-minute walk each way. And Joe's questions were about the Colts and Johnny Unitas and where was Memorial Stadium. And because this is before Google Maps, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, like I asked him if he ate crabs before, you know, like ask him about being from Philly and what I told him my aunt lived in Delaware and that I had been to Car. You know, it was like small talk. Mm-hmm. But we probably spent, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours together that day. You know, by the time we walked over, sat, had a whole meal. We had some Italian desserts. We walked back. It was lovely. It was May, you know, it was 2-3 weeks after he got drafted. And I'll never forget this. I mean, I'm sitting in there. My partner's making small talk with his father because they were more the same age, even though I'm a little closer to his father's age. But I remember saying this to him. I said, look, dude, I can help you get a deal or get a car or know somebody here. I've done business here forever. I'd love to have you on the show or segment. I said, but dude, if you win a Super Bowl here, you're not going to need a guy like me. you won't need me. You know, you'll be fine. If you come here and win, because nobody had won. We had been through a billion quarterbacks that didn't win after we threw the quarterback who won out. So there's a whole story of failed quarterbacks here before Joe got here. And here's this slappy who got thrown out of Pittsburgh, this skinny kid who played 1AA and yeah, he beat Towson. So that's the vibe from He didn't go to Michigan. He went to Delaware, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that. And now I'm just walking through the harbor with this big kid who clearly could throw a football and was just a nice kid and really smart, really intuitive, really sporty, really interested, really a nice person and a good human and the kind of guy that I would go get a beer with in real life or have a conversation with because he didn't have any bullshit with him. And That's the Joe Flacco I met that day. So that's the Joe Flacco I saw get emasculated and sent to the bench and hiding from the media and thrown out. And then I saw him. The next time I saw him was in front of a Bronco logo after I wrote. Well, I wrote what I wrote after that because I didn't interact with him, but I had text with him. And there's a million stories in between life's journey and highway. My wife's had cancer twice. I mean, Joe called me unsolicited. I'm sitting in a hospital next to my wife. He's like, hey, man, I just heard about your wife. What can I do? That's Joe Flacco.
Wow. That's really lovely. Thank you for sharing that. I think it's actually some of the stuff that you said made me think of the other thing that really resonated in your chapter about Joe. I guess I think it's chapter 8, but really one of the things that came out through that chapter for me, and it was one of the first times I heard it, and everyone talks about how cool, calm, and collected he is, but one of the strengths, maybe his biggest strength as his coach at Delaware talked about, was that he is not afraid to fail. And I really loved how you told those stories of him betting on himself and also just plays in the Super Bowl where he was kind of not afraid of these high stakes moments. And I wonder, having watched so much of his career, where do you think that comes from for him? Do you think that comes from his dad? I'm interested to know also kind of.
I don't know. They're naturally competitive people, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like they're all competitive and they all think they're great. And they've all been the best somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, I've gotten to know a couple of guys that went to Maine, right? Similar to Delaware, similar level of football. And they've made the NFL and they've hung out. And there's nobody from Maine. You know, a couple of guys from Delaware in the last 50 in my lifetime, there have been 10 guys from Delaware to ever make it. A handful that really make it. Nick Boyle still playing. I mean, make it like make money. Make money that you don't need to do anything else with your life when you're done. Make it. There have been Rich Gannon. You know, there's been a handful of guys at Delaware. Maine's the same thing. So for any of the guys that go to those kinds of schools that make it, there's already – Alabama didn't want him, or Pittsburgh threw him out, or they couldn't even get into Rutgers, or, you know, they couldn't forget Penn State or Ohio State, one of the gold standard places. So for Joe, I just, you know, getting to know him even more as it went on, he is truly like a Horatio Alger kind of figure. And I take some lessons of that with my life of where I'm from. So I love those kind of people. You know, I was born with a plastic spoon, you know, broken family, adopted, had a pregnant girlfriend at 50. So I had this whole thing with me. So guys that are overlooked, kicked down, thrown around, had to pay to get back into school, you know, weren't the prettiest girl at the dance. Like, I have better appreciation for that. But then they get wealthy. I mean, Joe made $160 million or something here. And the fact that he probably has already returned my text tonight from texting him to tell him his ears should be burning because I'm talking about it. It's just kind of the way you would want some people to be. But money changes people. Things change people. Fame changes people. I would say the thing that impresses me the most about Joe, and when you talk about that unflappableness or that coolness. I remember being with him after he won the Super Bowl when I was writing the chapter in the book. And again, like, along the journey, I've always like interacted with him, but sometimes it's about watching the Phillies play the other night, or about a play in a game, or about a song I heard, or about a thing I did, or, you know, what, because we would talk about anything but football a lot of times, right? In the locker room, even. It wasn't – the press conference is the press conference, and if I had an adjunct question, great. But much of my conversation was not like that. So deep thoughts with him, or trying to Dr. Melfi him a little bit, that was kind of my game. Kind of my game was to go up to the locker and not ask a question anybody else would ask about what he thought or what he saw. So when all this is over with, I'm deep thoughting him. And he came down to have a lunch with me for the book, and we wound up turning a breakfast into a lunch. We were there 3 hours. And he's like, "Hey man, why don't you just come up to my house and we'll like hang out, and I'll show you the neighborhood. I'll show you where I play ball. And I'll show you anything you want to see, tell you anything you want to know. And that way you'll like be able to write a better book, you know?" And I'm like, okay. So the following Tuesday, I drive up and I go up to Audubon, and it's the first day of basketball. So in his town, everything is an homage to Joe, because the Super Bowl was February 1st. This was March 15th. So it's 6 weeks after the Super Bowl. Every
hometown hero
shop has congrats Joe in his hometown. So we're, you know, I see all that. I go to his house and we're sitting in this little bar where two of his relatives were in it. Everybody knew him. Nobody bothered him. I'm just in the corner. We're literally drinking iced tea, watching basketball. And I said something to him like what you said. I said, "So, you know, what is it about back shoulder to Anquan Boldin on third and long? And what is it about you telling Steve Bisciotti?" Because I had talked to Bisciotti to ask him, because he gave me his story. I'm a reporter, Artica. You know,
you're digging. Yep.
Devious, you know? So I like to tell my subjects something I know about them that I could not possibly know. And that freaks them out. Then they give me a better story. So with him, it was more about like getting into his mind about that kind of a decision and risk management. Right. And he said, and I'm sort of yogic and sort of Buddhist as well, you know, he said, "Why would you think about anything negative?" He's like, "Why would you possibly think something's going to go wrong? Like, why would you think?" I don't think like that. So I'm imitating him a little bit, but he's like, "Why would I think like that? Why would I even, why would I even enter my mind that something's going to go wrong? Something might go wrong, but I'm not going to think about that ahead of time. And then when something goes wrong, I either got to tackle him." Cause that's how Joe processes things. Like, thinking negative, why would I bother doing that? That's a waste of time.
Yeah.
So when he said that to me, and I'm sitting in this bar drinking an iced tea, and we're eating chicken sandwiches and eating French fries, and I'm taking notes and whatnot, and I'm like, "Well, that's a different cat," because not everybody rolls like that.
Definitely. I mean, I think somebody might have said it, but just, you know, he doesn't ride the highs too high or the lows too low. And it's one of those.
Well, it used to piss fans off that he didn't like kick up dirt and go point fingers at the wide receiver where the ball popped up and cost him a pick. And
no, he seems like a real classy guy. I mean, you basically answered this question already, but I want to ask it maybe more directly, is like, what do you like about Joe? Is it just kind of what you said before of just, you know, humble guy, overlooked, but came
well, on
in
the and- side, like a story. Okay. Mm-hmm. So he's a great story. Like for me, I've been here forever, man. I've, this is my 30th year doing sports radio. I was working at a newspaper. All I ever wanted to do was what you do, right? So I was working at a paper in 1984 when the Mayflowers took the football team out of here. So I remember never not having a team. We were never going to get a team. I started on radio in 1991 here. We didn't have a team, and there was no hope we were ever getting a team. One of the stadiums was built, and the other one was a parking lot at that time, right? So waiting for the stadium to come. So to have a player get drafted who got thrown out of a big school to go back, to go to Delaware, to become a first round draft pick, to come here. And I'm giving you a con. This isn't Joe or Flacco or Delaware's name or anything, mm-hmm. just who this guy is, who comes down from Philadelphia and starts right away, goes to the playoffs and the championship game, and his pass is the pass that gets picked that cost them the game in Pittsburgh. I remember the upper deck shaking from being there because they could have won that game and gone to the Super Bowl his rookie year. Didn't, could have. I mean, they're there. They're one play away. He made the wrong play. The next year, close again. The next year, couple play. They won playoff games every year. Help me feed my family. I'm indebted. You know, I own a small business. So when I'm running bus trips to New England and Indianapolis and creating the kind of civic pride and civic inertia and memories and that deep-seated stuff that you can only have when you win a little bit, Joe created that in 8 and 9 and 10 and 11. He threw the pass to take us to the Super Bowl, and the guy dropped the ball in New England. And then a year later came back on the same field, same day, same weekend, and won and kicked their ass and had a perfect January and won a Super Bowl and got paid after he turned down $100 million mm-hmm. to say, no, I'll get 150, Steve. I'll go win a Super Bowl. You'll have to give me more.
Yeah.
And when Joe did the math on it, when Joe said, look, unless I break my leg, and even if I break my leg, I've already got $20 million in the bank for my first con. I'm not, mm-hmm. you know, I like Joe's like, I'm going to bet big on me because I can live on $20 million. I can live if it never happened. I could have lived if I would have gone back to Delaware and played community college and coach ball, because Joe would have been a math teacher or something. You know what I mean? Joe would have done mm-hmm. something else with his life. But Joe bets on Joe, and you know, that's just,
yeah,
it was cool. And I don't, and knowing Joe at that level where he came down to my house, and then at the end we had these moments that would make a cool movie, you know, weird stuff that happened like during the parade and after the parade and just different times where different things he said to me that were like, kind of like, well, that's going to go in the book. I mean, there's nobody around but me, and he ain't saying that to anybody else. So
I love weird stories. So what are some of the weird things that happened?
The day of the parade, I had in the first parade I rode in the parade. So you have to give some emotion to this, right? So I rode in the first parade in 01, accidentally sick as a dog holding a video camera that at the time the videotape was lost. Mike Flynn, I mentioned Maine idiot. He lost the tape of the parade from 01. I got it back. It was a COVID miracle. It's up online. Go watch it. It's the greatest thing ever. It was one of the, you know, other than the birth of my child, the marriage of my wife, and, you know, the love of my cat and my mother, the Ravens first parade was like the wildest thing I've ever experienced in my life. And I was in it, rode in it, videotaped it, and then Flynn lost the damn tape, right? So 12 years later, I don't even have the tape, and I didn't have a camera, so I didn't even have any pictures. So anyway, so keeping in mind that we won the Super Bowl again, and I had flown back and my wife had brought 5 buses back that landed at 6 a.m. and the parade started at like 10. My wife hadn't been asleep. She had been her ass on a bus a day and a half. The city's locked down. There's 500,000 people everywhere. And I got on the front end of the parade, and it was frightening. The parade here was like really, really frightening, like frightening. I don't know what to say, like dangerously frightening, with horses and people and trophies and barricades. And it was it was
sounds intense.
I explain it as frightening. I ran like Forrest Gump one way down Lombard Street. If you see on this side here where the stadium is, I went this way across, all the way across to the front of the stadium. And literally where I'm pointing, let's see, it would be right about here. There's a service ramp that you can see that's green, that's lit up. It's a ramp that goes up that leads down into the bowl of the stadium. And I had a pass, so I went up onto that ramp away. I got ahead of the parade. And I got up to where it was, and I got to the top, and Joe Flacco was all alone on a float. And there was a float that was too big to get through the berthing that kind of stopped the whole thing, like the Suez Canal. Okay. So everything stopped. So Joe's there and I'm there, and he sees me, and it's just me and him. I mean, just me and him, because we're behind the barricades. There's no fans. There's no, he's seeing people climb in the stadium. Literally. There were people climbing literally the facade. Go Google it. People were like Spider-Man, like January 6th, but without the guns. and nooses. So Joe's there and I'm there. And I said to him, "Hey man, what's up? Hey, how are you?" He had done, you can look this up. It's in the book. Maybe it was Letterman was still on the air. Maybe it was Letterman or Leno, whatever he did. It was New York, so it must have been Letterman. He did a New York, he did Disney World on Monday and then did television. And then now this is Tuesday morning. I drove to Jackson, Mississippi, flew home, did radio maniacally, did all of this stuff while my wife was in a 19-hour bus bender trying to get home. So this is now Tuesday at 11 in the morning. I have been running for my life in this parade. I get to him, and the first thing he says to me, "Be honest with me, man. Is this bigger than the first one?"
That's great.
So that's how competitive he is.
Okay.
So I'm with him, and I'm like, "Dude, you were really good last night on TV." And I don't always say that. Like, you know, I said that because I meant it. Because if he wasn't, I'd have been like, "Dude, you look like you had a stick up your ass last night." You just said, "Well, I didn't get any sleep, man. I won the Super Bowl the night before." But he's like, "You think so?" And I'm like, "Oh, dude, you were like you. You were like you." You know, like if you go back and watch whatever that little 6 minutes that he did on Letterman or whatever the couch piece was. And I think he told me, "Yeah, they flew me in on a helicopter from Teaneck or something." You know, it was like one of those things. And so we're walking down the ramp as we're telling this story, and it's just him and me. There's nobody around. Two media people with cameras go by us, and my phone starts blowing up. Like blowing up, like 200 texts in 2 minutes, blowing up. There was a helicopter above us filming.
Oh, wow.
He and I.
The whole interaction.
The helicopter found him, and he and I were like Italian, you know, like this and like this and like this. And it was all caught with the skycopter. "Well, we're over top of Raven Stadium. There's Joe Flacco coming into the stadium right now." And so like that went on, and like, I didn't know it. So there's all these screenshots coming to me of me doing like all this wacky stuff with Flacco. So that was like weird, really, really weird. So anyway, that's and cool. Then you walk in the stadium and there's 400,000 people climb in, and it was nuts. And everything like about that period of time, when you win a Super Bowl, I mean, I don't need to tell you, if you're Philadelphia people up there, you know, it's, they grease poles. Crazy stuff happens, you know? So it's a
celebration.
Memory for a lifetime, sure.
But it was kind
Joe
of like
created
a,
that. That's why you don't F with Joe, period. That,
so it seems like you had this like moment of zen in an otherwise just insane day.
Well, zen till it was caught on camera. Well, right. It was like captured and sort of a little weird, you know? It was a little like, it was the most private thing ever, the conversation we were having. Like, it was completely F-bomb, me and him just hanging out, thinking no one was looking. We were dancing while no one was watching, except there was a helicopter and my mother was watching.
Oh, that is wild. That is totally
wild. It's
crazy.
Yeah, it was weird.
So listen, Nestor, one of the a theme that stuck out at me and of Joe's story, and tell me if you think I'm missing something here that I should add to, but when I think about Joe's story, a big theme that I see is this really kind of healthy and inspiring combination of confidence and humility. And I think that maybe also goes to like just work ethic. I mean, here's somebody who plays to win and wants to win, but isn't an asshole about it. Like, he just seems like a really good guy. There was one quote from the chapter that I did read that I loved, where his old coach is saying, I mean, I could try to pull it up if you want, but he just says something about, you know, he went back home in the off season and he stayed with his little brother's room and he had a picture of Tom Brady on the wall. Like, he's, you know, he's not, he seems like but would you say like those are the themes?
He went home and slept in his parents' house until he was like married, like his fourth year. I mean, he had $10 million of earnings and was still sleeping in a split room with his brother to help get his younger brother and sister off to school. Like I said, why'd you go home and do that? He's like, well, you know, my parents needed help and I really wasn't doing anything else. So like, okay, you're 24 and you're, you know, multimillionaire and you're playing in the league.
You could be doing a lot of other things. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think for him, it was kind of famously said that he didn't have an iPod when he got here and didn't have like musical taste and really only had interest in sports and stuff. And golf and things like that. But, you know, he would go out to Las Vegas with like Todd Heap and, you know, Dennis Pitta and these guys. And it's like a milk and cookies tour. He's out in Vegas with a bunch of Mormon dudes playing golf. You know what I mean? Like literally, you know, those are his buddies on the team. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, his relationship with Dana, you know, their grandparents played football together. Their grandfathers played football. So, yeah. So just this crazy little town that he's from. And I'm just, you know, to wrap things, and if you want to know anything else, but I'm just delighted that he's going to play in Philly and have a chance there. I hope he plays well enough to play well. I always pull for Joe, but, you know, I don't pull for the Eagles, you know. But
what would you like to see? I mean, how would you like to see the next chapter of his story unfold?
I want to see him start a playoff game. You know, I had a long argument. Sal Palantonio knocked my camera over at the Super Bowl 2 years ago, and Jaworski's always pounding on the table when he does the show. And they're big advocates. And this is after Joe left and, you know, they had committed to Lamar. It was during that period before he went to Denver. We were all like taking numbers on whether he was going to win in Denver or not. I don't know if he'll win in Philly. I don't know. I mean, they have a whole new thing going on there. So I just wish him well, and I hope he stays healthy enough. I mean, I saw him take a couple of really nasty hits late in his career, you know, like when he pulled up lame. I was in, my wife had cancer the second time that he got hurt, and my wife was kind of in a little bit of a coma state at that time in the hospital. So I don't miss football games. The day he got hurt, I wasn't even there. I watched it on television in a hospital room, and he was my guest the next night to do a fundraiser for her. So I'm texting with him. He's in the hospital. I mean, I got stories. You're making me remember stuff that I forgot, quite frankly. But that's why I pull for Joe Flacco. So, you know, I remember the Kiko Alonso hit. You should Google that. It was one of the most vicious hits I've ever seen. I mean, it really, you know, moved the teeth in my jaw in the upper deck. And the stadium was kind of empty that night. It was a Thursday night game. It was after the Wembley knee and people weren't going to the games. And he took a straight head-on head. Nasty, nasty hit. As awful a football hit as you'll ever see. And that happened late here. So, you know, I've seen him, you know, get really injured badly. And I saw him just stay healthy as hell and never miss a game. He was completely durable, never missed games, won playoff games everywhere. Beat every Tom Brady and every Ben Roethlisberger and won with Ray Lewis and, you know, just he's a legend here. He's a legend here, really, and should be treated as such. Not, you know, they'll say Unitas was this and Ray Lewis was that and Cal Ripken was this. You know, anybody wants to piss on Joe Flacco, as he would say, come see me. Come see me.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you talking to me and sharing all this. This is great.
What are you doing? Tell everybody what you're doing. So like what your story is, because you're interviewing me to get some Joe Flacco stories.
Yeah,
and sure. I'll reset. Artica Cassini is with University of Delaware and is asking me to tell Joe Flacco stories. So that's what I do. So tell me what you do.
So I edit the University magazine. This was a recent one about leadership, how to lead like a blue hen. And I think, you know, I think Flacco has an inspiring leadership story of his own. Our most recent issue is about, from Delaware to DC. So it celebrates two of our other famous alums, including another Joe.
I make sure I pee at the Joe Biden rest stop every time. I was peeing there before he was the VP. I was peeing there when it was a lousy truck stop and didn't have proper bathroom. So, you know, I love me some Joe Biden rest stop there in Newark.
There you go.
So there.
Yeah. Classiest bathrooms in the city. So I do the alumni magazine at UD, and truly best job ever, because we have just the coolest alumni, I think, in the world.
So you're a graduate. You're not a student.
Yeah, I'm a graduate. I'm an editor. I work there.
How long have you worked there?
10 years. This is my UD watch for 10 years there.
So is it insulting you to say you look young enough to be a student, or like, that's a compliment?
I'm proud. I'm older than Joe Flacco.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So
I think that is a huge compliment. I graduated UD in 2005, and he came, he was there maybe my last year. I'm not sure. But I don't know, like I said to you, I don't know shit about sports. So, I emailed my girlfriend who used to work at UD. Her name is Nan Mulqueen, and she's the most phenomenal writer of them all. She was just a really cool person to work with. And I said, listen, can I interview you for background? Because, you know, you're a Baltimore girl, you go to Ravens games. And she said, well, I don't know shit about football. And I said, but you have season tickets. So she put me in touch with a bunch of her friends. I guess she goes just to see her friends. And one of those people was Stephanie, who is just lifelong.
Oh, yeah, Stephanie, of course. That's how I found you. Sure.
Yeah, she's a lifelong Ravens fan. And she...
family, dad, every sister, brother, everybody. I know her family. Yep.
Oh, that's really cool. So she said to me, she said, do you want to talk to Nestor? And I was just kind of being lazy. I said, oh, I think I'm good. And then I read your phenomenal goodbye letter to him. And I thought, holy cow, this guy knows everything. I would love to talk to him. And so I reached out to you, and I'm super grateful. And, you know, you've been super gracious to me. And I talked to a bunch of Joe's former players at Delaware, talked to Ravens fans. I'm talking to Eagles fans. Just trying to get a sense. Like I said, I don't really know about sports, but I know stories. And I agree. He's got just a really cool story. I think this is a really exciting next chapter for him. So I'm just really excited to tell it. And I just hope I'm telling the right story, you know, something that does justice to his, you know, everything he's been through so far. And, And
I'm hoping for redemption for Joe, but Joe is his own redeeming act. You know, Joe's got $150 million in the bank, and, you know, hopefully keeps his body together. And I hope he authors one great Philadelphia story. That's all. Whatever that Philadelphia story is, I hope that somewhere in the Eagle pantheon, there's one great win, one great story, one piece of it that he can own and take across the bridge to Jersey.
I love that. That's beautiful.
That's true. That's how I feel.
Yep.
It's not going to be beating us this year because we don't play them. So there. Artica, I appreciate you. Thanks for
having me
as part of your project. Artica Cassini's up at the University of Delaware. She's much older than she looks. Is that
not
better?
Not that much. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm older than I look.
Yeah, it's true. You look like you're my age.
Which is what? 23?
Late
30s. You know, flattery will get you everywhere when you're 52, pushing 53.
Oh,
you know,
nice. So,
and I don't even diet, man, although Marvin accuses me of that all the time. Hey, I appreciate you. Thanks for coming on the program and being a fun foil to allow me to tell some Joe Flacco stories. So there, Joe Flacco in a can in Philadelphia, trying to beat the Cowboys, the Redskins, and the Giants. What's not to love about that? You know, I mean, maybe some other teams are getting away. Exactly. Go Joe. There you go. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop these intelligent conversations. We call them Wise Chats now, all brought to you by our friends Wise Markets. There's a Pennsylvania company there for you, based right here in Baltimore right now with locations all over the place. And I'm going to get that signature crab cake at Wise Markets before it's all over with this summer. 30 crab cakes, 30 days. We started at Fadley's. We are at State Fair on the 21st, this Friday. It's Catonsville Appreciation Day. I'm going to get my chair out for the 4th of July picnic and fireworks and parade festival. State Fair, crab cakes on Friday. I'm in.